Thursday, October 14th, was a relatively quiet day, and because of last night, I felt like walking on eggshells. Lyndon had slept only intermittently. We had breakfast a little after 9 in his room. Then about 11, he dropped off to sleep, while I sat and wrote endless notes. Bell's briefing said very forthrightly, President Johnson is gaining his strength more slowly than anyone thought, and is weaker than anyone thought he would be at this point. I think the pace of the last 20 months has accumulated weariness that was not evident until the operation. All completely true and very wise to say, and went on to reiterate that the doctors continue to be pleased with his recovery and satisfied with the progress and find nothing out of the ordinary. It was President Eisenhower's birthday, and I remembered that Lyndon had said I must be sure to send a telegram. So I wrote one out and was delighted when Lyndon said, "Fine, send it," adding one sentence, "You were expressing sentiments I greatly admire on television last night." I feel so good when I can do something to help him. He is surrounded by people who do. We lunched a little after 2, Jim and Jake, Glenda and Marie. And then the day was so beautiful, and I said, "Let's go for a ride." Got no response, and then we began to ask if there weren't a solarium, a roof, a place we could go. There was, so off we put, Lyndon walking with a wheelchair following, down a couple of long hospital corridors with Rufus and Marie, to a small, quiet, sunny roof looking out over the forest and countryside into about 78-degree bright sunshine. And there we stayed for 2 hours, I with my lap full of notes, Lyndon in the yellow pajamas Muriel had given him, and the gray robe that the press had sent him. And Mary Margaret came, Courtney Linda, who played delightedly with Lyndon. Bill Moyer said, "Do you think it'd be all right if we let the press come up and just take a picture? No questions. Maybe they might let you alone for the weekend." I was pleased when Lyndon said yes. Courtney, black curls, bright eyes, pixie smile, was full of talk about, "I love you, Prez, and where's him?" and lifted Lyndon's spirits by her sheer joy in life. Suddenly there burst upon us about 100 members of the press, all getting in front of each other, vying for positions. I was relieved to see there were about 3 women with them. Snapped picture after picture, while Courtney obligingly kissed Lyndon on the cheek and hugged him, and went through a series of antics that delighted everybody. Son is his natural benefactor, and Lyndon looked reassuringly brown and healthy. I left about 5:30 to join Ashton to drive out to Great Falls before dark fell. I have a ravening desire to get out of the hospital, if it's even for an hour. We walked out to a lookout point, and below us was the wildness of rushing water, great boulders, whirlpools, and all around the scarlet and gold and crimson of October in the late twilight. Back at the hospital, I signed mail, dispatched Ashton, and then returned to Lyndon's room and presented to dinner with Vicky and Bill Moyers, who is getting off for a couple of days' vacation. He has a cold and is exhausted. And Jack and Marvin and Lucy and Pat sat in with us, though they didn't eat. We began to reminisce on the Senate great, Walter George and Clyde Huey of North Carolina and Tom Connolly of Texas. To me, Senator Kerr was one of the last of the great individualists. It is a grayer Senate now. No colorful characters have come along to take their place. Lyndon told anecdotes how Clyde Huey used to always wear a rose in his lapel and a clawhammer coat, and about the time how he, Lyndon, had to try to get him to change his vote on an important matter. And when it was well explained to him, Senator Huey said, "All right, beloved, but first I'll have to go back and wipe out some tracks I've made." And about Walter George and his great rolling organ voice, and the silence that fell on the Senate when he rose to speak. It was a good day. The shadow seemed to have lifted. One of the interesting events to me was to hear from Nat Owings that he had talked to the Speaker, that the Speaker had agreed, after conferring with George Stewart, the architect of the Capitol, that the plan to run a freeway below ground between the Capitol and the end of the Mall underneath the statue was agreeable to him, so that around the statue there can be the reflecting pool that is planned as a part of the whole Mall complex. The freeway, Nat Owings says, is already funded and the reflecting pool can be paid for by the money saved by rerouting the freeway straight instead of in a curve, and straight takes it right underneath this statue. I wonder if I shall live to see the completion of any part of Pennsylvania Avenue or the mall. But I saw the beginning of the Jefferson Memorial, and now it seems that it has been here forever. We will think no more of yesterday. Let the mood remain quiescent.